Welcome back. Part two of Answer the Joke. So far, we've got Joe as victim. We've talked about the Job archetype. What we'll be doing for the rest of the day is how do you heal this thing that we spent so much time this morning talking about. For that, let's take a look at paragraph 583. Why Job's torments and the divine wager should suddenly come to an end is not quite clear. So long as Job did not actually die, the pointless suffering could be continued indefinitely. We must, however, keep an eye on the background of all these events. Now comes the important sentence. It is just possible that something in this background will gradually begin to take shape as a compensation for Job's undeserved suffering. So, if the ego can maintain its integrity in the face of the injustice, a justice is constellated. If the ego does not take responsibility for what happened. Forget what I said. Constellated. I'll read you Edinger's summing up. Again, he does a nice job. I think I'll just give you one couple of sentences. What that means is that injustice, especially if it is consciously perceived, constellates its correction in the other, in the unconscious or in the outside world. In other words, injustice consciously perceived and borne constellates justice. 47, the next to last paragraph. Page 47. We got books all over the place. Yes, sorry, this is in the study guide. Now, we've sort of, what I've tried to do is organize these series of meanings around various aspects of the self. Remember, we had symbols of transformation, where the ego descended into the unconscious and was guided. And we found that was far too simple a metaphor. That was early Jung. That was when Jung was still under the influence of Freud. After the break from Freud, Jung spent those 15 years in sort of soul searching, and that's when he came upon this concept of the self. We talked about the self in alchemy as what emerges when the ego faces its opposites. So that it's not just that you descend into the unconscious and you get guided. Jung realized there's another step in there. That's what he came up with in his Night Sea Journey. And in the alchemical model, that extra step is the ego has to stay aware of its opposites. That activates the emergence of the self, which synthesizes them. That was Mysterium. We talked about Ion, in which what the ego has to do is withdraw projections. And out of withdrawing projections, the self is remade out of those pieces. It's not that you take the pieces and you make the self. You take the pieces and that activates the unconscious, which generates an image of the self that contains all those pieces. So you see, the ego and its relationship to the self is reevaluated. It has to initiate a process, but then ultimately it is taken up by that process. Much more complicated than just going into the unconscious and being guided. There is this intermediary state of either facing your opposites and the self is activated, akami, withdrawing projections and the self is activated, ion. Now, Job is another dimension of the operation of the self. Here, what the ego has to do is stand against injustice. First, it has to recognize that there is injustice. And believe me, that is not as easy as it sounds. Because we're taught, as we were saying, if something bad happens to you from a more powerful figure, it's your fault. The prince or the king is right, you are wrong. So the first thing to do is to know when you have been unjustly treated, that you have not taken on the standpoint of the perpetrator, that you can separate yourself out from the standpoint of the perpetrator, who may be more powerful and may give you a tremendous feeling of power because you're close to this perpetrator in your mind. But in fact, you've lost your power. And if the ego then stands against, recognizes and stands against injustice, that activates the self. So here is yet a third model for the self. Not opposites, not withdrawing projections, but recognizing and enduring injustice, and that activates the self to enter into your life in a creative fashion. Again, you don't create the self, you create the preconditions for the emergence of the self. That's the value of this work for understanding the self from yet a third point of view. Next week, our next meeting, we'll talk about the role of sex in activating the self. In the last class, we'll talk about synchronicity as an effect of the self. So I've tried to structure these workshops around each around one major facet of understanding how the self works. Next time we'll be doing psychology of the transference. And then the final time, which will be in fall of next year. I'll be pulling from a hodgepodge. Basically, the Adamant archetype, the Pali Jung letters. And I think it's called, I'll just get his books mixed up. I think it's called The New God Image. Where he'll be talking about the theological implications of synchronicity. Basically. So, the healing of the attack by evil is twofold. It's the recognition and the holding of innocence, and then the turning inside and watching the development that starts as a result. In other words, that is what makes the unconscious creative, or that's what allows the unconscious to become creative. And there, the ego is a servant of that process. I can never remember what I just said.
The healing of the attack by evil is twofold.
Yeah, maintaining innocence and, recognizing and maintaining innocence, the first point, and then watching the development which occurs spontaneously and creatively within, from the self, when injustice is consciously perceived and born. No, I think what you get in this response is a steady thread. See, each action of the self required a different action on the part of the ego. The first one was that swinging back and forth. That's alchemy. The second one was withdrawing projections. That's ion. That's really the Gnostic model, because he took his model from Gnosticism, because you rebuilt God in the Gnostic model by the way you lived, and then the piece of you went back to God. And here the Job model is that it's a steady stream of development starts at this recognition and holding your integrity through your despair. It's not that you don't feel miserable, you do feel miserable. But you don't give up and say life is meaningless. Even though all facts speak to the contrary, I believe life is meaningless. This is for Jung where faith comes in.
Trying to think of that, you know, would you think something like, you know, say a mother and father loses a child, you know, it's sort of like you feel like you're innocent in terms of...
That's, yes, sure, definitely.
And to try to hold that not despair, this is sort of like...
You know, to not say, oh, God knows better. To reduce it to the old paradigm.
God's will.
Or it's God's will. You know, there's a whole school of Eastern / Jungian thought that if something happens, it was meant to happen. I was talking to a woman who said that every time something happened. Oh, if it happens, it was meant to happen. So I said, well, now you were telling about the guy you were dating molesting your daughter. Was that meant to happen? It doesn't fit. You can absolve yourself of this, you know, opportunity. It doesn't seem like an opportunity at the moment, but of this process by either saying it was meant to happen or the world is meaningless. There are two errors as far as Jung is concerned. But to say I don't surrender to cynicism even though I don't see the meaning. Like Job saying, I will not give up. And then if you're the therapist, what you have to do is support that position. Usually against one heck of a raging storm. And just say, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. But do not stop asking the question until we do know. It's that third thing. Well, or are the ego is maintaining the third attitude is what allows the unconscious to become creative in a steady state sort of way. Here it's not swinging, but it's holding steady in the despair. And I think really people will not believe you unless you have been through this yourself. Because if you haven't been through it yourself, it'll sound like optimistic coaching. But I wanted to, you know, we spent a lot of time on the wound, the wounder. I also wanted to make it clear how important it is that it is a non-ego process that gets started. And that Jung's real purpose in this is how do you heal from these situations?
Already has made the shift.
And I think once you've had one of those experiences, you can't go back to the old king anymore. You realize, oh, this is what religious experience is. This is what grace is. It is, I could have all the literalisms in the world, but what I have is something different. So that's the shift into another level of consciousness, the David level of consciousness. And here I think Jung's gift is tremendous to us. How do you work with tragedy? Yeah.
I'm going through an experience of this right now, and the way I can describe it is I'm facing unresolved emotional issues that go back to my childhood. And
yes.
the despair in there is just coming up and I'm feeling it. And my ego doesn't know any more about how to fix it now than it did then. And but I'm now able, instead of being caught by that despair, to maintain both positions. And I'm having to say from the ego, I don't know what the answer is, but we'll stand here together, and waiting then for a new thing to show itself. Because it's not the ego that it's like the divinity, the self is not the same.
Yep.
And I'm able to stand there in that position, whereas before I would collapse into the despair and then be pulled into depression.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, paragraph 587. More, now we're just going to work with this idea for a couple of sentences. See, paragraph 587, if you go down, go up from the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 lines up, all together, he pays so little attention. Altogether, he pays so little attention to Job's real situation that one suspects him of having an ulterior motive which is more important to him. Here's the important sentence. Job is no more than the outward occasion for an inward process of dialectic in God. In other words, within the self, there is a drive to make our knowledge of that self complete. And the ego of individuals who are going through this process are the carriers of that drive to synthesis. That's the dialectic, back and forth, to reshape and reform an image of God into, into what? At least into a form that is more suited to our current historical moment. I don't want to get off into it now, but we will get into it when we do the last one of these in the fall. Jung's understanding in little more precise detail what he understands by the image of God and what it means when we say the image of God is culturally relative. But if we can just stay with the image for the moment, realize I'm aware there's a whole lot more to say on that point. But for our purposes, and to understand the sentence, that the self has within it the drive to be known more completely and uses the ego of victims to do so. Now, paragraph 595, we've talked about this earlier. Now we can hear some of Jung's phrasing. Returning to the ego's responsibility, if you go about 595, paragraph 595, go up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines. The new factor is something that has never occurred before in the history of the world, the unheard of fact that without knowing it or wanting it, a mortal man is raised by his moral behavior above the stars in heaven, from which position of advantage he can behold the back of Yahweh, the abysmal world of shards. In other words, that the ego is more conscious than God, or if you use the psychological language, the self. And that is the turning moment, that we don't feel ourselves as a child against a parent that knows better, but that we raise our own capacity for discrimination up to be equal to those events of our life. And 605, I'm going to go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines. Nevertheless, nevertheless, Job got his satisfaction without Yahweh's intending it, and possibly without himself knowing it, as the poet would have it appear. Yahweh's elocution have the unthinking yet nonetheless transparent purpose of showing Job the brutal power of the demiurge. This is I, the creator of all the ungovernable, ruthless forces of nature, which are not subject to any ethical laws. I, too, am an amoral force of nature, a purely phenomenal personality that cannot see its own back. That is what we need to see about God. And next paragraph. This is, or at any rate could be, a moral satisfaction of the first order for Job, because through this declaration, man, in spite of his impotence, is set up as a judge over God himself. Edinger brings in here the concept of the container and the contained. And it's another way to visualize the shift between the first and second king. In the first system, the ego is contained in God. So we say, God knows better. God's will gives me comfort. I follow God's will, and that justifies my life. That's the ego being contained in God. But with this, there's a shift. The ego is the container for God. It no longer simply defers judgment. It judges. It no longer simply feels protected. It questions. You could say, and this is how I would put it, in a way that I feel gives it dignity, what we're talking about is moving from a child-to-parent relationship of individual to God to an adult-to-adult relationship to God. And the same thing applies to our work with the unconscious. At the beginning of the therapeutic process, you can pretty much trust what dreams say. And what we try to get people to do at that point is to hear the dream's meaning and follow it. In other words, to have the ego contained in the point of view of the unconscious. But there comes a time when dreams cease to be trustworthy anymore. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. And we have to discriminate what if that dream is trustworthy and what of that dream is not trustworthy. What dreams can I follow? What dreams are trying to trick me? I've often asked myself, why in the world does the unconscious do that? I think it does not want to have a situation where it's the container and we are the contained. It wants to be contained. So you still, of course, do your inner work with as much devotion, but you bring in an element of judgment. As I tell my dreams, you know, I'm the one who pays the taxes here. There's a wonderful dream that Jung has just about the time he was writing the Book of Job, where he's in, I think India maybe, and he's in the hall of a what do they call their rulers? Emperor, I think, he says. I forget exactly. Anyway, he is supposed to bow down to the floor and touch his head and prostrate himself in front of the ruler. And he bows down, but he keeps his head a millimeter away from the ground because he says, my judgment is my divine prerogative. And I must always keep that at all costs and never submit myself completely to anything. So that's, again, an ego that refuses to be contained. Individual responsibility is the final highest value. So that's the basic psychological argument, and we will now move on to some of its implications. But the attack by evil, maintaining innocence and truthfulness in the face of a temptation to feel guilty, living in the despair of knowing it's unjust, not having an answer until the unconscious begins to produce a way out, which would be a new awareness of the self, and I think at the same time an outer opportunity for development. The next thing Jung does is turn now away from the Book of Job. So we're going to be circling around the book now, where up to the present point we've been looking right at the book. And he takes the order of the books of the Bible psychologically. Now this drives biblical scholars crazy, because as you probably know, the order of the books of the Bible don't necessarily have anything to do with the dates that they're written. It's a compilation. But Jung's feeling is the way that the Bible is arranged, irregardless of the historical arrangement in terms of the time, is itself a reflection of the psychological pattern. So he now turns to looking at the books in the Bible that come after the Book of Job to represent the psychology that is likely to transpire after a Job event. If you happen to have this at home, I'll just mention the pages. This is from Bible and the Psyche, page 12 and 13. 12 and 13. I don't think I was going to write them up there, but I don't think I need to do that. Traditionally, the Old Testament is divided into three major genres of books. The historical books, starting with Genesis, Exodus, you know, if you've read those, you know, it's all about the history. The next section is called the poetical wisdom books, and that begins with Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiasticus, and the Song of Solomon. There are some apocryphals in there, but the main books are Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiasticus, and Song of Solomon. Then comes the third genre after that, which is the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, etc. With the beginning of Psalms and Proverbs, a new figure appears in the Bible for the first time, Sophia. Wisdom. And Jung says that's no accident. Sophia is the representation of the feminine that Yahweh needs to incarnate himself. That's putting it in the biblical language. If you put it in the psychological language, the feminine is what is generated when we consciously face the evil that has been visited upon us. That is how the feminine is generated. The response of the psyche to our carrying this darkness is the generation of wisdom. Let's look at Jung on that. Well, I think he just says what I said. He gives some examples of wisdom in page on paragraph 610, maybe 609 too. The big place where you hear about Sophia, maybe we should start with 609, is Proverbs 8. It's a second creation myth, and Sophia is speaking. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was, when there were no depths, I was brought forth, when there were no foundations abounding the water, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was with him. As a master workman, and I was his daily delight. Probably didn't hear that God had a girlfriend in Sunday school. But in this account of creation, Sophia is there before, wisdom is there before the birth of the world. That is what Jung then is basing his next discussion on, the birth of the feminine after the crisis and the containment of the darkness. Let's go to paragraph 616. Jung now plays with this a little bit. He's restating what I just said in a slightly more detailed way. What he's looking at now, if you go down 616, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines, he's just talking about how this relationship to Sophia appears after the book of Job. Its relation to the appearance of Sophia. I skip a line from the ancient records. I'll see that. From the ancient records, we know that the divine drama was enacted between God and his people, who were betrothed to him, the masculine dynamis, like a woman, and over whose faithfulness he watched jealously. If you go down about 5 or 6 lines, his readiness to deliver Job into Satan's murderous hands proved that he doubts Job precisely because he projects his own tendency to unfaithfulness upon a scapegoat. There is reason to suspect that he is about to loosen his matrimonial ties with Israel, but hide this intention from himself. So, what's that mean psychologically? That the self is originally invested in our relationship to the collective. Old paradigm experiences God through the community. But this is a shift toward an individual experience, away from the community.
An introvert like that, an extrovert like that, describing more aligned to this way.
Well, but you're just saying that extroverts can only exist contained in community. Why?
Why are they?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going off the young idea of personality types. That's the nature of an extrovert, right?
My question is, why is that the nature of an extrovert?
Because if they're the old school,
well, because the temptation is to define ourselves by the reactions given to us through the community. I think the center of gravity becomes more introverted.
You know, especially when there's be no judgment, if you're extroverted or introverted, you're both just different from the patient. This is interesting, you know, idea.
So there's a difference between being extroverted and being just following along. And you can be extroverted, but be more personally centered in that you know what you're doing rather than just following the laws. You know, just because you're extroverted doesn't mean that you don't have an awareness of who you are.
Yeah, I think the real question is, what happens when you have to go against general opinion?
Yeah.
The extrovert will collapse because he has defined himself by virtue of the community. The introvert will collapse because there isn't the skill to develop a new relationship to community. But I think this is just a question of where does the center of gravity lie? And this is about a shift to the interior.
Just a question about the typology. Jung believed that as you grew and understood things more, you shifted more towards the middle. Which is different from how it's interpreted now. When you take those, you know, if you go to a different type of therapist, they'll say, well, you're an introvert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a dynamic, not a static model. Well, we are winding our way to what Edinger calls the most important sentence in the book. Bottom of paragraph 617. Whoever knows God has an effect on him. Bottom of paragraph 617, whoever knows God, next to last line, whoever knows God has an effect on him. So what he's talking about at the moment is a shift in the self's relationship to the collective. And that the knowledge of the self instigates a transformation of that relationship. Away from being contained to containing. That is to say, I think it's how we free ourselves up from the tyranny of public opinion.
And that's
and then bringing it back in your own particular way. For an introvert, it might be writing a book. For an extrovert, it might be running for politics. Paragraph 640.
Six forty.
Paragraph. Again, you've heard this. We're just hearing Jung's words. Here's where Jung talks about the transformation of God that we began with. The another subtext of this book is how that individual encounter with the dark experience has, as one of its effects, the evolution of that God image. And he says at the bottom of paragraph 640, Yahweh, go up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines, Yahweh must become man precisely because he has done man a wrong. Skip a sentence. Because his creature has surpassed him, he must regenerate himself. Yes, it is.
And the Yahweh's transformation, right? Which is part of being human. The capacity for self-reflection that Yahweh doesn't have, that's a distinction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also, you might think for a second, if you're working in this area, it presupposes the person you're walking down this road with is capable of reflection. Which is not always the case. What happens if they aren't?
They don't have the capacity for insight anymore?
Yeah.
Are we to believe that to be true?
Yes, I do.
I mean, look at his walk.
Yeah, what happens when a culture doesn't be able to be reflective?
Well, that's right on the point, because see, that culture is living in the old king. And at least the way Jung is trying to present this, the way for that culture to evolve is for individuals in that culture to begin evolving. It's an optimistic viewpoint, but that's his viewpoint. If there's a country in the world that had a God complex, it's us. We're out saving everybody. Except ourselves. It's up to the individual, yeah. Definitely.
Well, the energy does, it's so interesting, in the Reformation, when Catholicism couldn't make a change, the energy moved up to northern Europe. And all of the manufacturing of the generative energy moved out of the place where it wasn't moving to a new place. So it would be interesting to look at where things, well, like here, our economy is having trouble, where the generative energy and ideas moved in the world. Because I guess if you say that the self doesn't have an outlet for regeneration, it moves someplace else until it does.
Yeah. Well, I think here again, you know, how much of this is historically relative, but I think Jung's answer is individual. You can't say, oh, it's going to be this part of the country or this part of the world, but in individuals who are dealing with this problem. That's his answer, really.
Has an individual. mean, it's always, every new mythology has people that spread it on the margins, and they're always the ones, the prophets, I mean, they're always the ones that bring in the new voice.
Yeah.
It's why there's always so much suffering at the margins, because you're going to be holding that tension between two. So it really is no different now. The only big difference now is that we're a global community.
Yep.
So it brings on a really interesting dimension in terms of who the other is.
Mm-hmm.
Where it didn't used to be that way when people lived more contained geographically.
Yeah.
You could see the movement happening in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I
think we are. It's, the dynamics that's taking place around the world, it used to take place within communities.
Yeah. And again, this is Jung's hope that what he uncovered will start in individuals and then spread. I think the big question is, will it spread? We just don't know. Quickly look at just, we need to look at this 650, some of this we've done. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that's the new movie, but it starts in individuals. I think what you brought to us is an awareness of conscious participation that generations before didn't have. And I think people were participating in what was coming to them, they were just putting it out there, but they didn't have the capacity to understand that they were generating this new energy and bringing in this new story. Whereas I think what Jung said,
yeah.
He looked back and he said, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And so those of us who are born now can see consciously how we're participating.
Yeah.
And it allows us to say things differently than it ever allowed people to do before. Because I think the capacity was greater before, but it just was so hard people couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
And I think today that is beginning to shift.
That's a good point. I think I might rephrase what I was thinking a little bit like, I think, you know, what is new here? I think the new thing is the shift from container to contain, from contained to container. That we don't throw out religion, but we see it as what we contain, not what contains us.
If you look at religion as saying that's nothing more than hiding the mystery.
That how you engage the mystery has to no longer be a thing that subsumes us, that we subsume. Yeah. Yeah, there is a wonderful quote. I don't have it with me, but I have, you know, you've heard me say I like the historian Arnold Toynbee, and there's a secondary source for Toynbee. I heard give a lecture, and the guy said, you know, historical change always begins with somebody. I like that. Yeah.
Right. Most people are just following along.
Yeah. Well, what one so easily falls into trends and they, but I think, you know, that's the old paradigm speaking. And we fall into it just like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or the man who started microcredits, which is now literally beginning to take over the world. It started with one man and, $100? It's the man who started this Grumman Bank in Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw something, and the collective wasn't taking care of it, and he said, I can do something about this.
Yeah, I'm going to, next point in your study guide, I think we can skip over. We kind of talked about that, the separation. That's the Satan falling from heaven. The next couple of points on the Roman numeral 10 are worth looking at. Paragraph 659, it's coming back to where we've been about the container. And here we start moving into what I might call Jung's theology. As I said, there's a whole book devoted to this that Inger wrote, which we'll get to in our last meeting here.
Jung's what?
Well, it's a sort of a dirty word, Jung's theology.
That's why you said it quiet.
That's why I said it quiet. Yeah, that's a new swear word. Go up the paragraph 659. Go up one, two, at the bottom of the page where it starts. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven lines up. The fact that Christian ethics leads to collisions of duty speaks in its favor. By engendering insoluble conflicts and consequently an afflictio anima, meaning a suffering of the soul, it brings man nearer to a knowledge of God. All opposites are of God, therefore man must bend to this burden. And in so doing, he finds that God in his oppositeness has taken possession of him. Incarnated in him, he becomes a vessel filled with divine conflict. So,
what conflict?
Conflict. So, remember, this is Jung not talking scientifically, but I think he's saying, what will be the main constituent of a new religious attitude? What will religious people be doing 200 years from now? Or 200 years from now, how should we understand what religious is? And I think his answer is suffering, conflict. That is the religious task. Not being good, not all the righteous definitions we have, but the individual who endures their experience of injustice and carries it, knowing that that is not just an accident, that is a religious experience. So Jung is sort of unofficially here redefining religious experience. The nature of God is a polarity, and when you are torn by polarity, you are conscious of God. It is not simply following your bliss or making chicken soup. It's allowing yourself to be caught up in life to the point where this conflict sits in the center of your soul. You know, I think you just said it, but we need to enlarge on it. It's what is it to be fully alive? That's it. To be fully alive is to be who you are. I mean, it sounds like such a cliche, I'm sorry. But when you see how Jung envisions the hell of getting to who you are, it's not such a cliche anymore. Now, I personally think it has social ramifications. I think we can say that somebody who is conscious of the self is likely to have this and this and this characteristic and not this and this and this characteristic. I'm not sure we could define it so easily now. But, and that I would say that, you know, given the historical demands of our time we've talked about today, ecology, Arab-Christian, you know, conflicts, that person will be more able to respond creatively to the political, social, relational challenges that are facing us. That's how I would kind of bring it down to nuts and bolts. But I think in a more general sense, you know, to have an if then, because you got an is. But I think we can say there are some characteristics of that is. I don't know if we should get off onto it here, but. well, we should get off onto as a break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish the book, and then we'll work through a dream, as a for instance. So have a stretch.